Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the no outlet sign of free speech, because once you get this far, there's no outlet. You're not going to get any farther unless you keep free speech going by sending badly needed fundage. Do that by going to republicbroadcasting.org, finding the donate button, smashing it with extreme prejudice, and then following the instructions. Okay, today we have with us Paul Edward Stevenson. Paul, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Patrick.
Well, it's great to have you. All right, let's just start. There's a couple of main themes I want to discuss to get going. One is Zelensky and how awesome he is, and then the other is your totally awesome race for the next leader of the Tory party. Because I think is it drag time Tory hour over in Britain. So, but before all that happens, you've got still Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He's going to have one more mandate with, is that what you call it, a mandate? He's going to have a mandate with his boyfriend Zelensky soon, isn't he?
Yeah, a man hyphen date, you could call it.
Yeah. So Zelensky, why would he be going over there one more time? What's that all about?
That's a very good question. I guess to show his unwavering support for Judaism, the Ukrainian struggle.
The advice, the relationship that they've struck up, and I don't know how many times he's gone over. He's gone over like two or three times already, and I guess they speak on the phone. And one could make the case that he's giving them all the wrong advice to keep. Because supposedly back in March, when you had representatives of the Ukrainian government and representatives of the Russian government meeting in Turkey and seemingly making movement towards coming to terms, I think the Ukrainians for a day or so were indicating a willingness to give up maybe Crimea, and which of course that's never coming back, and the Donbass. They looked like they were ready to come to terms, perhaps at least. And Johnson said, no, don't do it. You got to fight to the bitter end. And here we are approaching the bitter end, which is very bitter. It's so much worse. There's in no universe could that be looked at as good advice. And yet he's still welcome in Kiev. What's that all about?
Well, they got to keep the scam going. They got to keep piling up those Ukrainian bodies and adding to the Russian bodies as best they can, and attempting, I guess, which was a major part of their original plan to weaken Russia, which isn't working. But the whole thing's a scam. They got to keep the money coming, of course, from the American taxpayer, which to go into the pockets of Zelensky and some of his buddies, of course, some of the corrupt politicians who vote for this, and maybe some of the weapons manufacturers will get some of this money too. But it's a whole big scam, and the Ukraine is just an unaccountable vacuum hellhole for unaccountable corruption. It's a complete frenzy. It's just, I saw pictures, when you see Zelensky and what's his name, Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and mm-hmm. Nancy Pelosi all over there with these massive smiles on their face. Well, the fix is in, Patrick. This is the criminal club at work.
That is a rogue's gallery, that's for sure. So, for instance, I heard a report, a news report. I mean, there is some news, and whether I get this 100% accurate or just more or less accurate, there was some sort of plane crash, like a little cargo plane crash that exploded very explosively, as if there was lots of weapons on board. And I think the news reports are saying, oh, well, it was a cargo ship of weapons from Serbia going to Bangladesh, but it was actually almost certainly weapons from Ukraine being sold onto the black market somewhere. And, you know, there is no accountability. There is no mechanism, even like Senator Rand Paul, who his, you know, he's not as vigorous or effective in opposing this as one would like, but at least he is making certain efforts. And he had slowed down one of the votes on the weapons shipments and aid packages to Ukraine, saying, well, we have no mechanism for tracing the aid, seeing what's happening to it. And of course there isn't. And it's almost certain, or I'd say it is certain, that a lot of the aid that's going, a lot of the weapons that are going, are being diverted. They're being sold in order to line the pockets of Zelensky and his
inner circle
collaborators. Yeah, his inner circle, many of whom are Jews, but I'm sure not exclusively, before this all blows up, and it is all blowing up. Right?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, it's pretty much a failed state over there now. I mean, to say it's frustrating that people hail this audacious criminal with levels of hubris that I have never witnessed, and that really is saying something when you look at Jewish power and his insult to the American people and the Western people. So shame on them for their ignorance to be thinking that this is a democracy that should be protected. But of course, the mainstream media has scant coverage of the unrest that's in Europe that does not want an increasing amount of European citizens are feeling the pain from the sanctions on Russia. And all things being equal, they don't see Russia as an enemy. They see their own governments and their own economic policies and inflation as the enemy. You know, it's like they don't have any quarrel with those Russians. What was Muhammad Ali said about the Vietnamese? I got no quarrel with the Viet Cong. That's how, you know, a lot of people in Europe feel about Russia. It's how we feel about Russia right from the start. Okay, we're more informed than maybe your average person. I don't know. Well, we do these shows, so we probably have to be. But, you know, they don't cover that. But to have even a percentage, even at the start, to support this idea that they are a democracy. You know, this is Zelensky, the great hero, the Churchillian hero, who basically rounds up and imprisons his political dissenters. That's the kind of democracy it is. If you thought it was the most corrupt country in Europe before all this started, man, this is off the charts now. I mean, this place is an absolute wrecking ball. And this Zelensky clown, his audacity. I mean, earlier in the week, he was asked, because the questions are starting to come in. I'm amazed a reporter even asked him. But he was asked how he feels about the U.S. taxpayers' inflation concerns, which is the number one concern in the U.S., and that this extra money, these billions, which are being sent over to the Ukraine, are exacerbating these problems. And here's his response. Inflation, I quote, "Inflation is nothing. Who is thinking about inflation? These things are secondary." Absolute, complete, and utter contempt for the United States and the citizens and the inflation that they're suffering. Now, of course, he's not going to be worried about inflation because the American taxpayers' money, which has been sent to the Ukraine and exacerbating the inflation, a nice percentage chunk of that will be going into some offshore bank account for Vladimir, which will more than cover any inflation problems in his life. I mean, this guy's worth $1 billion plus, and by the end of this, he's probably going to be worth $3-4 billion. Who knows? He's a complete con man, and it's painful to watch this guy completely insult and con the whole, you know, large percentage of the Western world. And unfortunately, even those of us who are informed, we are dealing with such rampant corruption and such blatant disregard and contempt for the will of the people of the West. It's out of control, but there needs to be a day of reckoning for this, because, as I say, this thing's out of control. But for a statement like that, "Inflation is nothing. Who is thinking about inflation?" Well, the reporter just told him who's thinking about inflation. They told him it's the United States number one in a poll. It was the number one concern for United States citizens, and it's the same in Europe. These things are secondary. Well, they're secondary to him because he's too busy, as I say, robbing the American people, conning half the Western world, and doing Vogue photo shoots with his wife, another con artist, no doubt, if she's involved with this guy. But, you know, but sorry to rant, but I mean, it's difficult to watch this clown and for people to be falling for it. And he also said earlier in the week, he was asked about the Europe's concerns about energy prices. And he said, Russia, quote, is imposing price terror. I mean, Russia has suffered. If they weren't protected and they hadn't saw the punch coming so that they could counter it, and that's what has happened. The Americans throw big, and the West throw these big swinging punches that you can see coming from a mile away. And Putin was able to slip the punch and counter it massively effectively. And this guy says Russia's imposing price terror when this massive swinging punch in the most unprecedented sanctions that we've ever seen put on a country. And he has the audacity again to say Russia is imposing price terror. It's incredible to witness the aggression towards Russia and then the whinging when it backfires. When you throw the big punch and Putin easily slips you and knocks you out, essentially, and then when you come around to be moaning about how aggressive and how mean the guy who counterpunched you is, you know? I mean, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it was a massive attack on Russia. Russia, by the way, when you know, the United States still has a population that's a little over 50% white, but the white population is not the ruling class. Obviously, they are the enemy class of the ruling elite. So you can't really call America may be technically a white country because it's got 55% or so white population, but in terms of being ruled by whites, no, it's not. And so then what's the biggest white country on the earth? It's Russia. And you can very much look at what's going on here as a Jewish attack on white people, as part of the overall Jewish attack on white people. And I certainly look at it that way.
If you go to Ukraine, if you go to Ukraine or you go to Russia, you will see a lot of beautiful looking people who look just very, very like Germans and Eastern Europeans. I know that they're Slavs and whatever, and you can get into all that and go back to that whole World War II thing and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, if you meet the majority of people from the Ukraine, blonde hair people, blue eyes, green eyes, of course, they're white. So that's an added incentive on top of all the other hatred towards Russia and Vladimir Putin, who's a genuine threat to their hegemony, you know?
Right. So Zelensky, at the very start of this, I just want to remind people, this is all stuff that you can pretty easily verify. This is all stuff that was on Tucker Carlson's show, even, and other mainstream shows. At the very start of this, Zelensky closed the borders to men 18 to 60. Right? He issued an order that men 18 to 60 were not allowed to leave the country, although Jews were able to get out of the country. And I've often referenced this, and I'm sure you can find it easily enough with a search. Tucker Carlson and other Fox hosts had on this guy, this Jewish guy, with a vest with, you know, from some nonprofit charity group, with Hebrew letters on his vest, and he was on Fox News in order to raise money to get Jewish people out of Ukraine. And he might not have specified Jewish people, but he had like some sort of Hebrew accent, and he was wearing a vest with big Hebrew letters on it. And Tucker Carlson, who had just minutes earlier reported on this order by Zelensky not to allow men out of the country, said, well, how are you going to be able to do that? And he just said, oh, we have ways. And then insisted that they display the website on screen so people could donate. It was all very bizarre, but this is what's happened. The Jews were allowed to leave, and the Goyim are being drafted into this meat grinder. And the whole military strategy, if you could call it a military strategy, because it doesn't really seem to have a legitimate military purpose. Zelensky ordering his military to try to hold all of these towns that are indefensible and, you know, not to retreat, to just be besieged and besieged and besieged until they're overrun, rather than retreating to defensible lines. This has been producing hundreds since it started, hundreds of deaths, military deaths per day, and even more wounded. So they're losing about 1,000 troops a day. Well, this has been going on. What are we are
almost
5 months into it.
Yeah.
And so, if you're going to say this has been going on for 150 days, and they've been losing hundreds per day, you're probably talking about easily 20,000 dead, easily 20,000 dead, 20,000 to 30,000 dead probably. And, you know, 150,000 injured, something like around those, over 100,000 injured. So this is a complete meat grinder. And what has Ukraine gotten out of it? Nothing. And it, not less than nothing. They're getting negative out of it, because the longer this goes on, the more they are going to lose, to the extent that, I don't know if you saw this, Paul, but Dmitry Medvedev, the former prime minister, the former, yeah, he, the former president and the current head of the National Security Council, they call him the deputy head, but that's because the president, Putin, is the technical chairman of it. So he's a vice chair. But so he's still a very important person in Russia. And he tweeted out this map of Ukraine from 2014, where it still had Crimea Peninsula and the Donbass, and then a map, a potential map from after the war, where there's really nothing left of Ukraine except Kiev and its suburbs. And big parts are annexed by Romania, by Poland in particular, and then the rest is Russia. That is, for somebody of Dmitry Medvedev's stature to be releasing something like that, that says a lot.
Yeah, well, it goes even further than that, because he issued a warning, and mainstream media covered that. I think I might have mentioned, or I meant to cover it, maybe on one of the roundtables, but I didn't get a chance because, you know, you get a little bit sidetracked. But he issued a threat to Kiev and the West. And I think he basically was talking in very, you know, hyperbolic kind of language. I'm trying to find it, if I can find it here. But it was quite fascinating. And again, I mean, probably this is, you know, hyperbole, but he mentioned words like the apocalypse. And, okay, Russia's Medvedev issues nuclear warning. It's told the United States that attempts by the West to punish a nuclear power such as Russia for the war in Ukraine risk endangering humanity. He said Russia's invasion of Ukraine has triggered the most serious crisis in relations between Russia and the West since the 62 Cuban Missile Crisis. And he blamed the United States, citing the, he said, attempts to use the courts or tribunals to investigate Russia's actions in Ukraine would be futile and risk global devastation. The idea of punishing a country that has one of the largest nuclear potentials is absurd and potentially poses a threat to the existence of humanity. But there was another more specific threat to Kiev, I think. He said he would descend the apocalypse on Kiev, I think, if they attack, that's what it was, if they dare to attack the Crimea. So he's not holding back. Just another little bit.
Well, it's very interesting about Medvedev in particular, because he has emerged as the bad cop. You know, Lavrov can speak bluntly, but he's the consummate diplomat. And Putin is always very careful with his words. And so Medvedev has really, he has really emerged as the bad cop, the person who
the Rottweiler.
He's making the veiled threats. And what's interesting about this, you know, he makes the veiled threats, and then, you know, Putin seems restrained by comparison. And what's interesting about this is during that period where Medvedev was president, he was in the office.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Seems restrained by comparison. And what's interesting about this is during that period where Medvedev was president, and it was pretty obvious he was kind of a seat warmer president because Putin had been term limited out of office. The Russian president's only allowed to serve two consecutive terms. So from 2008 to 2012, Medvedev took a term as president, and Putin was prime minister, and you know, maybe there was kind of a power sharing agreement going on or whatever. And then, of course, Putin came back in 2012, and Medvedev was prime minister for about the next 8 years or so until he resigned and was replaced by a economic technocrat, and then was put in his current position, which seems like a big demotion, but. And may well have been a demotion, and there may have been a little bit of rancor or something between he and Putin. But for a long time, Medvedev had been viewed in Washington as a potential replacement for Putin. When, you know, if we can get Putin out of the way, then we can deal with Medvedev, who's more pro-Western and this and that. But it's really not. I mean, right now it looks quite the opposite, that Medvedev is. Fostering himself as much more hardcore at this point.
Yeah, he's the Siberian wolf salivating that Putin has on a leash.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, judging by the things that have been said over the past 5 months, Medvedev. I mean, he's made all sorts of veiled threats.
Yeah, well, the other thing, you know, you're talking about this is no benefit for the Ukrainians. And it's the meat grinder, but it's also an economic and energy meat grinder for Europe. And this is, you know, you're seeing so much tension in Europe now because of all this. And, you know, they're accusing Putin, and I don't know what exactly is the truth here, but, you know, of this, weaponizing energy. And again, the hypocrisy of it and the childlike whinging when they impose the most aggressive sanctions on Putin. And only recently he has turned off the Nord Stream pipeline. Now, the Russians claim that this is for standard maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
But the media is all over this as, like, you know, energy terror and blaming Putin for turning off the Nord Stream pipeline. I mean, I'm sorry, but Putin has got more patience and restraint than I would have had.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
As soon as Germany had joined in the sanction terror against my country, that pipeline would have been turned off that same hour.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, the West, part of these sanctions, they seized hundreds of billions of dollars of Russian central bank assets.
Yeah.
How I mean, they were trying to destroy the ruble. They were trying to destroy the economy. And so then to cry about and even then, the, you know, we say that he turned off the gas in the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. But even then, I think it's still flowing at about 20%. It's still flowing to an extent. But yeah, and in the early days of the war, apparently Germany, despite the sanctions, had accelerated its purchases of Russian gas in order to fill up its reserves in preparation of the winter. So, you know, really, while on the one hand, the West had a pretty much full court press economically, and the economic war was the real war, because the real objective wasn't anything about Ukraine. The real objective was to overthrow the Russian government.
Of course.
And the means of overthrowing the Russian government wasn't going to be Vladimir Zelensky marching into Moscow. It was to have a collapsed ruble, mass, you know, hyperinflation in Russia, and then demonstrations that would bring down the government. And clearly that's not going to happen. If it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to happen in Western countries, because the West not only have they lost the proxy military war in Russia, they've lost the war in the economic war.
And Russia's selling more gas now than they ever did. They're selling it to, they're selling cheap. This is hilarious. They're selling cheap gas to the Saudis, which the Saudis, you know, are now saying, you know, well, if America wants our gas, we'll have to, you know, we'll have our oil, we'll have to sell it at a massive premium. You know, you couldn't make it up. You couldn't make it up.
Yeah. So I mean, Europe is still getting some gas. They're getting it by way of Russian gas, by way of say Saudi or oil. They're getting it by way of India, by third countries, which of course adds to the costs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, they're still importing the oil, but they're getting it in a more indirect, more expensive way. So Zelensky was asked about inflation in the United States, but I'm sure the inflation in most European countries is worse than it is in the United States. What are you seeing?
I don't know. It's pretty bad. It was bad before. I mean, the inflation problem wasn't caused by the Ukraine and Russia situation. That's only exacerbated its effect, you know, and we haven't seen the full consequences of that yet when it comes to food supplies because of the wheat and the fertilizers. Mm. But it's definitely affecting Europe. We are not as dependent on Russian oil and natural gas here, but Germany are the ones who are going to suffer. But the thing is, when Germany suffers, the whole EU suffers, because the more southern countries like Italy and Greece, they suck on the German people. All right? The Germans...
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. Patricia, excellent herbal formula. I use Extendivite to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Brian, I'm using Extendivite, and for me, it has made a world of difference. God made all these nutrients in the ground. Enough said. Cammy, 5 stars. I feel a lot of energy since I started taking Extendivite. TR, 5 stars. All I can say is Extendivite works. Buy it, try it, and see for yourself. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with
Security for them, but not for us. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. House lawmakers are being offered up to $10,000 to beef up their home security systems amid increasing threats of violence. They can also get up to $150 a month to pay for the system service. To summarize, lawmakers who each earn $174,000 a year and each have a $1.3 million expense account will get more for security because of threats. Meanwhile, out in the real world, crime rates are skyrocketing across the country. 145 law enforcement have been killed in the line of duty so far this year. The average police salary is less than one-third a member of the House, and I'd rather see that $5 million go to protecting law enforcement so that they're around to protect me when I need them. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem. Parabellum.
We're certainly suffering from all EU sufferers because the more southern countries like Italy and Greece, they suck on the German teat. All right? The Germans foot the bill for most of this facade of the EU. And when they start to suffer, and they're suffering inflation and the energy costs, there will be a breaking point. Hungary has already condemned these sanctions and these EU policies against the EU. And of course, you hear this argument, it's very irritating. Your usual centrist types, conservative types in America, saying, well, Trump was right. Germany shouldn't have been so reliant on those Russians. This was inevitable. No, it wasn't. The fact that they had a perfectly good trading relationship with Russia, and the fact that they had probably their lowest military budget since the last war is evidence that they saw no threat from Russia, because there was no threat from Russia. The United States, the Jewish oligarchs in the United States had to go to Germany and bully them and intimidate them into being hostile to Russia. Because when you have a trading relationship like that, it increases the chance of peace. If you're doing good business with someone, the last thing you want to do is start a war with them. But this mindset prevails. Well, Trump was right. Those stupid Germans depending on Russia. That's this whole mindset. It's very prevalent, particularly in the United States, but here too, that this assumption, this premise that Russia is evil, and this is only going to end badly, that you're dealing with these Russians. Well, why? as I say, your average European does not see Russia as a threat. It sees their own governments. It sees the European Union. It sees the corruption. It sees the inflation. It does not see Vladimir Putin and the Russian Federation as a threat, because guess what, Patrick? It isn't a threat unless you have a bunch of Jews over there stoking it up.
Yeah. And, you know, you make the very important point. While the, you know, the higher energy prices are stoking inflation, it's an inflation that was already smoldering. It was already burning. And I do remember from last summer hearing you and Richard Kerry talking about the higher costs of lumber, higher costs of a lot of things. The inflation was already, you know, and the cause of the inflation was supply chain issues. To an extent, the massive increase in the money supply. But, you know, you had all these supply chain issues because truckers weren't allowed to truck without the vaccination, without the deadly vax. So you already had all this inflationary pressure in the West, the United, and around the world. Yeah. But energy is a huge part of, you know, a household budget of a country's GDP. And so right now with gas at all-time record highs, it's bad enough in the summertime, but if it remains like this for the winter, you're probably going to have people freezing to death. You're going to have massive problems. And already, you know, in the EU, in the United States too, you're heading into political crises. So,
right? I mean, there's snap Orban, elections. Yeah.
Viktor Orban's the one leader in the so-called Western countries, in the NATO countries, the one who genuinely read this correctly and positioned himself correctly. But you look at Mario Draghi, who was the prime minister of Italy, and, you know, he was gung-ho for all of this stuff too, even though he shouldn't have been, even though, you know, Italy and Russia had a pretty good relationship over the past years. And yet he went along with all this, and everything blew up, and so he engineered his own ouster, basically. He tried to quit. He couldn't. He was, the president said, "Don't quit," and he engineered his own ouster because he rather than being a man and saying, "Oh, I did something wrong. Let's try to fix it." He just wants to run away, and when the fecal matter hits the ventilation device, he wants to be as far away as possible. And then, of course, we see what's going on.
The parliament's dissolved in Italy. The parliament's now dissolved in Italy, and you've got like a kind of a, you know, Venezuelan, South American type situation there in Italy. You've got problems in Estonia. The coalition there, I think, has collapsed. You've got problems in Bulgaria. I mean, if any good comes out of this, it will be the end of the European Union, which is essentially an authoritarian. I don't know whether you'd call it communist or Marxist, but it's essentially authoritarian, bureaucratic dictatorship. And it's a total wrecking ball for Europe, and we don't need it. And hopefully it's on its last legs.
Yeah, which, you know, it's kind of a shame. I remember when I started studying the European Union, or what it was before, it was the European Union. It was the, what was it called? The EC, the European Community, and the Common Market. Back in the 80s, I was studying it. And I had been to Europe. I traveled around Europe. And it was such an inconvenience. These countries were so small, and every time you'd cross borders, you had to go to a bank and they would take their pound of flesh in the currency exchange, and crossing borders took so much time, and you know, often having to change trains. In the case of Spain, the track gauge didn't match the rest of Europe, and you know, it just seemed like
how they sold it.
Yeah, and of course it became such a disaster. And, you know, maybe in the 80s, maybe in the 50s when all this started, the intentions might have been perfectly good. I'm not in a position to say. The intentions might have been good. But you can see how things really changed. And, you know, part of the blame, a big hunk of the blame, I think, has to go to Tony Blair. Because traditionally, the British had been the skeptics of Europe. And so, you know, they didn't join the EU or the European community, the common market, until the 70s. So they were latecomers to it. And then they were always go slow in terms of expansion. So Britain was part of the first round of expansion, which included Denmark and Ireland. those three countries, they turned it from 6 to 9. Then the 10th country wasn't until like the, was it the early 80s? They had Greece. And then by the, I think, early 90s, they brought in Spain and Portugal. So it was pretty go slow. But once, and the idea was that there were two ways to go about building the European Union. One way was through deepening, so that you increase the integration of institutions as you're increasing, you know, integration of these economies that are similar. You bring them into similar states, and that's one strategy. And another would be through widening, so getting more and more members. But the thing is, the more and more members you get, these countries, especially in Southern and Eastern Europe, which were much poorer, they're not going to be able to integrate economically, because they've got big budget, you know, they've got unsound fiscal management, big budget deficits, all sorts of stuff. Tony Blair comes in, it's like, no, we can do both at the same time. And, you know, one could make the argument that one or the other of the strategies taken by itself, if you had a widening strategy without the deepening, without the transfer of authority from national governments to central governments, and so it was a very loose confederation, that might have worked. Or if it had just been integration within the relatively similar economies of Northwestern Europe, that might have worked. But to do this full court integration all over the continent with, you know, countries that had been communist and countries that had been just poor southern countries, there was no way that was going to work. Yeah.
And also you had the free movement of people, you see. So now, you know, anybody can go and live anywhere. But, you know, guess what? You didn't have this mass migration of British people and French people and German people moving to Estonia and Bulgaria.
Right.
Guess what? Guess where they came? And also, of course, when it comes to refugees and this type of thing, you have the European Union dictating to you as to how many so-called refugees you got to have, which Hungary ignore and then feel the wrath of the EU for this. You know, these are all big problems. I mean, really, you could have had cooperation between the nation states themselves, where we could have thought, you know what, some of the things you spoke about, you know, having to exchange money at borders and all this sort of stuff, and, you know, we can do checks to make sure that people come on in are legitimate, you know, citizens of other countries, and we can let them in without, you know, too much hassle, and we can loosen this up a little bit. But that doesn't mean you can come in and have residency and claim, you know, all sorts of welfare benefits and all sorts of things which a country has set up and historically their taxpayers have built, like the NHS here. But you could have loosened some of those more annoying aspects of, like, traveling through where the borders maybe are a little bit, you know, more, what's the word I'm looking for? Just a little bit more flexible in terms of people moving within the European countries themselves. But that could have been cooperated within the European countries. So they could have got together, France, Germany, and Hungary, and Spain could have got together and said, are we happy with this? And whoever's happy with it, fine. Whoever's not, that's fine too. So if you need to change your money, if Spain says no, and you need to go jump through a few extra hoops, then that's up to Spain, you know. But you mentioned Tony Blair there. Tony's at it again. You know, Tony's never too far away. You know, he should be in prison, but he's not. You know, crafty Tony has decided to use the illegal immigration problem here, which, considering he almost single-handedly destroyed the demographic anatomy of Europe by all sorts of UN charters and, you know, or reforms that he signed us up to, as well as appointing Barbara Roche, a Jew, to be the immigration secretary, who had a complete open door policy. He's now decided that the solution for illegal immigration is digital IDs. You see, Tony loves this digital ID thing, so he sits up at night thinking, how can I? No one seems to be really buying this, you know, and I've got to sit and think of something. And then he realizes the British people are sick and tired of this illegal immigration. So he put two and two together, and a little light bulb went on, and he's like, how about all you angry Brits support me with my digital ID so we can sort out the illegal immigration problem, you know? Old Tony, you got to hand it to him, you know? The problem is, you might get some Brits falling for this, but I doubt it, because they know Tony's a crook, I think, you know?
Yeah. That's for sure. So with the immigration, you know, had the EU just remained at the original six, which was Germany or West Germany, France and Italy, and then the three small Benelux countries, Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg, or even the next round of expansion with Britain, Ireland, and Denmark. Had it remained like that, and you had the you know, the effect of removal of immigration borders between those countries, it probably wouldn't have done a whole lot to the demographics. You know, Ireland's no. poorer than the other countries. Maybe some Irishmen would have taken advantage of it. But, you know, to the extent you have some as you know, have I don't think the Irish are the big problem in London right now. Hardly. And then you know,
they've all left too, Patrick. Where they used to be, you know, used to have nice little Irish bars there and some Catholic churches now. What you have now is you have little 24-hour Pakistani Muslim shops, and which kind of probably network for the grooming gangs, and sort of meeting joints for grooming gangs and money laundering, and large mosques. So yeah, the Irish they've disappeared.
Yeah, and you didn't have the phenomenon of Irish plumbers the way you've got the Polish plumbers. So you wouldn't have had massive numbers of you didn't. I mean, how many Germans came to to Britain, and how many Britons went to Germany?
We don't want those Germans, Patrick. No, thank you. Please, no Germans. You know, who knows what they... I mean, if the Germans get angry or something over here and they start uniting with white people, I mean, we could have a repeat of what happened to the Jews. We don't want those. So we would rather have Syrians. Please, more Syrians.
It could be another Holocaust, yeah.
It could be. I mean, you can't take that kind of risk. I mean, even if it didn't happen, I mean, we just don't want to risk that.
Yeah, it's the potential. And then, of course, by having this free movement policy, it means, you know, if you want to get to Britain, the doorstep of Britain is no longer, well, I mean, it would have no longer been the channel anyway, but instead of the doorstep to Britain being Sicily, now the doorstep to Britain is the Ceuta enclave in northern Africa.
Yeah.
The doorstep to Britain is, you know, these Greek islands just a mile off the shore of Turkey.
Yeah, and of course, the whole immigration debate, let's cover this a little bit. We're down to two candidates now to replace Boris Johnson. Rishi Sunak, complete globalist, an ex-Goldman Sachs guy or some big banking guy. And I would have thought at one point it should have been reserved for tragic but hyperbolic comedy. But alas... Liz Truss is actually the most likely candidate. She is actually leading Dishi Rishi, as they call him over here, Rishi Sunak, an Indian. So we've got Liz Truss, who was over there humiliated by Sergey Lavrov. In fact, there's a very, I don't know whether it's tasteful for me to say this was funny, but let's face it. I mean, I haven't read the comments, but I'm sure the comments in these videos, which are almost viral now, she was debating Rishi Sunak, and the mediator in this debate was a young lady called Kate McCann. And Liz was in the middle of a rant about how we need to stop Vladimir Putin, because Vladimir Putin, once he's finished in the Ukraine, is essentially going to take over the West, Patrick. You know, he's not going to stop. He's a madman. And he'll come into Eastern Europe, and eventually, you know, he'll be on our doorstep here in London as well. So she was in the middle of this warning about why it's so important to keep funding this war on Ukraine and to stop Vladimir Putin. And there was an almighty clatter, bang, and Liz Truss's face dropped and was in complete shock and said, oh, my God, because the moderator had collapsed. And this is interesting, right? Because we spoke about Liz Truss, and if you remember, maybe 6 weeks ago, we were trying to establish whether these people are actually deliberately lying or whether they believe this stuff about Vladimir Putin, you know? In other words, are they complete puppets in terms of, you know, they're cynical liars and they know exactly what they're doing and it's all BS, or whether they actually believe it. Now, for the first time, and I think this is going to help her. If it affected me this way, it's probably going to help her. For the first time, I saw a human being. I saw a woman whose reaction to this, you couldn't see it on the television, but you could hear it, when the moderator had collapsed. And Liz Truss instantly went into like a complete shock, But it was also a very caring kind of response. And it wasn't fake, because she wasn't expecting the skirt to collapse. I don't think there were, even these people would stage such a thing. And I actually thought, for that, in that moment, maybe Liz Truss is actually totally brainwashed and propagandized. Maybe the politicians, especially, you know, some of the lesser ones, they don't need to know. They're brought in and they're brainwashed and propagandized so incredibly themselves. So you could be two types of people. You could be completely gullible, where you could be used to these people, or you could be trust, where they don't need to tell you where he is.
Giri giri mare gambate.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
They're brainwashed and propagandized so incredibly themselves. So you could be two types of people. You could be completely gullible, where you could be useful because you believe this stuff, or you're completely corrupt, where they know they can tell you it's all BS and they can tell you the real reasons and go out and lie to the British public. But I actually thought maybe she's genuine. Maybe she's just that stupid where she believes that Putin is going to eventually try and conquer the West, you know, this narrative. But the other interesting thing is as well, why is a young lady, I think in her late 20s, early 30s, who, when I looked at her earlier, wasn't sweating, looked perfectly healthy and then just collapsed. Is this another example of the adverse reaction to these vaccines? Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly there's a lot of that going around. And this we only have a minute or so left, but this kind of brings me to one of my themes of late. And I'm increasingly starting to think that the people that we see in the ruling class and even the people in the shadowy elite, way more than most people would think, that just like the normies are brainwashed, that these people are brainwashed to a much greater extent than they are just cynically bought off or cynically evil.
Maybe,
you know, there's going to be some of that being bought off. There's going to be some of that being evil. And at some levels, people have to know what's going on. But I would say that way more than most people would assume, that somebody like Liz Truss, that they are just they because these narratives have been developed over decades or even centuries.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I thought. I thought she may well be one of these people. As you say, over decades, these narratives are built upon like structures, and then they just have to tweak it. They just have to add on a couple of bricks and say, listen, Vladimir Putin is the next Adolf Hitler, and we need you to be strong on this, Liz, because, you know, your country is dependent on you here, and so is Europe. And, you know, maybe she is, because honestly, it was quite endearing, her reaction. Now, Rishi Sunak, on the other hand, I firmly believe fits the other category, and maybe the British public are sensing that he's disingenuous, he's a corrupt globalist, he's too slick, and he knows exactly what he's doing. But maybe just Liz is in the dark, and, you know, women do tend to be more, she might just be a bit more pliable, but her reaction was quite endearing. It was you couldn't argue that, okay, this woman's actually a human being. You could relate to her reaction. And ironically, even though she was making her point and winning that, and they thought that maybe this could damage her, you know, this is like an inconvenient interruption because she's doing well, it might only add to her. If it actually would make me prefer her than Rishi Sunak, then what's it going to do to your average normie?
Yeah, well, these things can have massive impacts on elections, and I'm not going to explain it, but if anybody wants to go back and look at, what was the guy's name? I think his name was Brian Shaw. He asked a question to Michael Dukakis about Michael Dukakis' wife, Kitty, potentially, what would you do if she got raped and murdered? Would you have a death penalty? And he says, no, I'm philosophically opposed to the death penalty. And George Bush, the first George Bush, was like, well, gosh, there. Wait a minute, Brian. Wait a minute. And he just seemed more human. And that was basically Dukakis' last chance to win the election. And he blew it, and he knew he blew it. But anyway, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure, Patrick, as always. I had a lot to get through, and I'm glad we touched on some of the other issues like Truss and Blair, et cetera, et cetera. We managed to get those in there because they're important.
They are important. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.